Yes, Mr. Hatt.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mrs. Tarassi.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Here. Can you please stand for the flag?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so our first item off is our athletic budget. There was a request that we come for tonight to share how the athletic budget is crafted, what it looks like, and then answer questions. So I'm going to turn it over to Cassie for a moment, and she's going to enlighten everyone what goes inside of our athletic budget.
On the revenue side, the athletic budget takes in pay to participate fees, gate receipts, and then sometimes some donations. And then based on salaries, there's some retirement income, which just offsets the same expenses. The expenditure side does anything that's directly tied to athletics. It's Chad, it's Kyle. It's all the coaches, whether they're contacted or payroll, or it's the refs, the officials, the game help, the athletic supervisors, the expenses that are uniforms, necessary supplies that the district covers, capital outlay for new equipment. Can't remember if that was this year or last year. Direct equipment for the athletic programs. Does anyone have specific questions about what contains in athletics versus athletics is part of the general fund?
It has its own little category.
It does. So on the budget you guys approved, there's a 293 function for athletic activities. That's the athletics.
How much did we bring in for pay to play?
So far this year,
yeah.
It has been about almost $100,000.
What is the overall budget for athletic department?
Usually roughly varied, yes. Based on projects that we have going on.
Sure. We take in a little bit out to other schools or no?
We do. That goes on rental income. That's in the general fund side.
That's general. That's just on the athletic.
Right. Because the cost of, like, the building utilities and that goes out of the operations budget, and that's not really in the direct athletics.
So, you mentioned fees. Mm-hmm. So, like, fees for
pay to participate fees?
I thought so that pay to play is part of the fee structure.
That we did $100,000. Mm-hmm. Okay. Expenditure side, we don't bring in $2 million in our profits. I wish.
I thought the question was, what is the what is the overall budget? You said $2 million. So how much of that comes out of the general fund, and how much of it's coming out of pay to play and some of these other?
It's all part of the general fund.
So money goes directly
to
the general fund.
So that $2 million for athletics is part of the $70 million budget for the general fund.
I understand that.
So are you asking how many?
Do you break it out? Do you ever break it out? Like, this is how much money is coming into the general fund from athletics. This is how much is you.
It's all together, but in each audit, there's a schedule of the athletic revenues and expenditures, which is what I put in board briefs probably about a month ago. And that lists out only the athletic revenue and only the athletic expenditures. And it's never even.
It never broke it out. Totally.
It So I can provide it again this week.
The categories.
As far
when,
as
when
what do you mean
category?
I can look up in a minute.
Only
but
because I'm telling you right now, and I'm being honestly truthful, I'm behind on board briefs, so it might have been one of the board briefs, but I didn't get a chance to look at. If that is true, I will apologize right now and say that
so,
I got it in.
Are you?
Roughly April 16th. April 16th.
So, Cass, to help the board is understanding what our, how much we receive like this year for revenue. So, our revenue source would be paid at this date.
And we've received, it's, we've received so far $166,231.
Yeah. Oh.
In total. That's what I've received so far. And expenditures, we've spent. And we've spent here today just shy of $139,000.
Oh, we spent a little more than the ground.
There's no way at the K-12 level necessarily to ever have your athletics bring in enough for what it costs for all the things.
Yeah.
That would never be.
Just for additional context, even at the collegiate level, so there's a little over 1,100 Division 1, 2, and 3 NCAA institutions. Within the past decade, on average, there's only about 20 to 30 total schools that bring in revenue. Everybody else loses money. At university, we had a $26 million operating budget. We would bring in roughly $22, $23 million a year. And university would help us out for the other two to three that we believe we're guaranteed to not be able to cover our expenditures. So even at the highest level of collegiate athletics, so they have a lot more opportunities for revenue generation, athletics does not make any money. Certain SEC, Big Ten level schools that make a lot of money, mostly for philanthropic giving and boosters.
And a little shy of 20 years ago, the athletic fund used to be totally separate. Actually have to transfer money from your general fund to your athletic fund. And 2007-ish, it's in my board briefs, that may not be the right year, but it's in 2007. The Governmental Accounting Standards Board changed that to where the athletic fund is part of your general fund. It's not considered a separate fund. Because it was basically just every year they're just transferring money from general fund and then you just kind of part of your general fund and not have to extra stuff you have to
do. Is there an expenditure cap on the budget?
Whatever the board approves for that function is the cap.
Do we know what the approval for the athletic department is on the cap? Historically, currently, I know I don't think I ever voted on
the budget that the budget that you guys approved in February approved a $1.4 million budget. Correct.
But it typically runs 2 million.
It varies from year to year based on the needs.
Exactly.
There's not always
that's
needs
that you already spent.
Right, almost.
We're at the spring, so the final you have your spring coaches, and maybe still some tournaments that get paid for, but otherwise, the vast majority of your expenses have already happened this year. So when it comes to athletic budgets, you have to pay for your coaches. If the economics got really, really bad, that's when you're looking to boosters and other groups to help offset other costs. Other costs could be uniforms. But right now, we cover the uniform, we cover the equipment. We cover, you know, in some districts, allocate, for example, $1,200 to the sport. Okay? Well, that's for the year. And yeah, you weren't paying uniforms out of that. And so it's a tough one where we take, at this point in time, we're able to, and so we try to do what we can do, but that's where then you chat with these coaches. It's all about fundraisers and or other supports for things that we could would never buy. and I'm going to check speed to, you know, some of the stuff that coaches would love to see, but they have to.
Yeah, so some of my goals is to make sure that the necessities for sport are covered within the school district. When it comes to fundraising, I want to make sure that we're not publicly advertising that we can't afford buses for transportation or we can't afford to pay the officials to officiate a contest. So the types of strategies that we use is making sure that I'm screening what they're fundraising for so that when they have a fundraiser and they're generating some revenue that they're able to what the actual fundraiser funds are going to be used for. So in an instance of, it's very sport specific, but let's take volleyball. They may need setting targets to help them practice to become better setters. That may not be an equipment supply line item that we can afford within the school district because it is more of a program enhancer, not necessarily something that is essential for the sport. So if we don't have the funds to be able to do that, that's where the coaches and I would communicate. That's something that they would need to fundraise for. Let's develop a strategy and a plan to go out and have a target audience for who can help fundraise for that setting target. Basketball, they may need, you've probably seen in the corner of the gym, it's like shooting machines that shoot it, it catches it, and it shoots it back to you. Those sorts of things, similarly, would be something that we would fundraise for. Those are program enhancers that will benefit the program, certainly, may not be essential for an event for a competition standpoint.
That fundraising is what kind of triggered some questions for me. So when I look at the totality of it, the public, and add your taxes to the school system, child to play in the sports, and then they're the ones that are supplying the money for the fundraisers. So it may look like it's coming out of multiple pockets, but it's one community. It's coming out of the pockets of the community for which we live. And so I think about this families, which is why I was like, is there any way we could get rid of pay-to-play? You know, that may open some opportunities for people because, again, they have one pocket. They got one paycheck. And so when they're multiply putting it out in three different ways for sports, you see how that looks.
And the same parents are business owners, and then they're hit for sponsorships, so they then pay more.
But
it's the same pocket.
You said it.
It's not like you're going outside to another pocket. It's the same pocket of people that we're asking money from are the same people that struggle to put their kids in pay to play, and now they have to, I know because I get all of the fundraisers. You know, and hey, can you help give this and give with this? And, like, the list gets very long from the community.
We've never, I should say never, that's a wrong word, to not have pay to participate. I mean, we geeked out of our board. So we have two choices. Either A, we're okay with it, we just eat it, and we figure out in our budget that $100,000 that it's just something that's less, you know, there, and we just eat it and we deal with it. Or you find out a backflow system to put the $100,000 back in. And so that's what we would honestly would love to not have paid to participate.
When we look at $100,000, we go, you know, from a personal standpoint, for some of us, $100,000 is a chunk of change in the bank account. We would notice it in talking about Casio, correct me if I'm wrong, $77 million in a budget, $100,000 is some of the way that we allocate money. To me, is not a considerable amount of money, and it may open opportunities for fundraising for people that say, hey, my kids are in sport, now I want to contribute and be able to help fundraise because they have the extra money. So I personally, with $100,000, would just like to see it cost.
Okay, that's good to know.
Okay.
All right, we'll vote in here this week.
No, but I'm at a board meeting.
You don't even have to make a vote. All it takes is listening to the conversations around the table helps. And
would you support that?
I would. Yeah.
Okay. We're all happy.
Jesse, do we take in much from quote-unquote advertising, same with scoreboards, however we allow that?
It varies. Some of the advertising revenue has gone into the athletics internal account, so I don't have that number in front of me. But it varies from year to year, depending on what the commitment is from the organization. I would think there would be opportunities.
Help support your community.
I just signed a contract last week for $6,000 for a scoreboard ad.
This is
a well, you've
done
your deed,
John. This is a great segue, Tom, for Chuck's plan for a updated scoreboard in the basketball sports gymnasium. Whatever you guys call it. Sorry,
Larry Beeson Memorial Gymnasium.
He has a plan that he's trying to seek sponsors for the board to get an updated scoreboard, and the sponsorships would pay over time the cost of that board. So it would not cost the district anything if Dr. Hessen's hope to get enough sponsorships to move forward with that.
As long as the sponsorship advertisement doesn't become overriding to the atmosphere of a high school football game.
Well, this is in the basketball gym, but same thoughts.
And I'm assuming they wouldn't want the readers.
What?
They wouldn't want the readers. He's
not having that. No, I don't think they're allowed to do that.
I don't think that would be considered discrimination.
And Anheuser-Busch would be the first one.
Can't do that due to federal regulations.
Thank you.
Federal dollars. We're okay. I'll give him
one anyway, so. I want to see if these basketball games, they have the flip. Right alongside the side, have you seen those?
Dashboards.
Yeah. And they probably have, three or four different companies as they put.
We do sell advertising at our scores table. Has a digital screen on it, and we sell advertising on that digital screen. So it rotates, and there's a blend of Minero Trojans, brand strategy items, and then it will flip to homeowners. Auto insurance are the next thing, right now we're doing a lot of advertising for post-secondary universities, so I reach out to schools like BGSU and offer them, advertising space, and then they give us a little money to help also defray the cost of those sorts of events.
That's a good question. You don't have to answer it. You don't want to do that. Heavy on the question. Do you feel as a business owner that the advertising for which you're getting is supportive, not just supporting the community, but supportive of the business operation. Does that make sense?
As far as on ROI, we keep track of that.
Yeah.
And
we
don't just support the public schools, we support other schools as well. Mm-hmm. So we're on scoreboards and advertising and digital boards for other school districts.
So I'm sure you can check with your advertisers to ensure that they are satisfied with their.
Pull it though and share who's in the gymnasium right now. I do want to preface this though too. Remember at all times that first and foremost, every piece of grass and surface we have at the high school, the middle school, it's a classroom first. So even the track, it's still a classroom. Okay, we use it for that purpose. And do we have it as a competition area? Yes. And so athletics is a secondary component to it. So that I just always want to remind people of that point. Okay? So, Chad, you want to talk about where the next steps are here for us, especially in the gym?
Yeah, so I think during my presentation, it was on one of the slides that was a graphic reference. We did just start advertising and put kind of a teaser out on social media to really target. It's a Daktronics, which is really the leader in boards across the country. A 16x9 video board with wrap above it, decoration that goes around the board. On the side of the gym, so if you walk in the main entrance, that video board would have six anchor partner spots that would be static advertising spaces. Those are advertising spaces that we're ready to take to market to sell. The multi-year agreements, $1,000 per year for those anchor partnerships. The other branding opportunities that come with those is I'm selling either times or actions.
So what I mean by that is the time would be at the end of the first timeout, you get a 30-second video advertisement. So whether that's a local company like a McDonald's and they already have a commercial that they just want to feed us and we run, or a different local company that's like, we've never done a commercial before, we'd love to involve our public school students in our digital media marketing classes and have them come out and shoot a video so that business owners saying, go Trojans, looking forward to the game tonight, kick some butt, whatever that thing might be. Our students are the ones that are going to be helping to run and operate that board during the game. So first time out happens, they're queuing up all that information to go up on the video board so that when they press play, that animation or digital graphic would run at the end of the first time. Time or action, so that was the time. The action would be like a digital animation for a three-pointer. So a really common one right now in professional sports and collegiate is the Lowe's drilling a three-pointer. So they have a graphic that comes through, and it's kind of like a drill on a basketball, and it comes across the screen. And so anytime somebody hits a three-pointer, that kid would hit that button on the iPad, and it'd show on the screen Lowe's drilling a three-pointer. So those are the types of advertising spaces and opportunities that would happen. You know, to Darla's point, we don't want to oversaturate and have every single waking moment be something that is outsourced outside of Monroe Athletics being advertised, but there are a ton of opportunities within sport to overlay those and have a wonderful blend. So those four opportunities for, and then there's 10 for Premier, and that's just in digital space. And that includes, like, sponsoring student athlete at the games, where they get a shout out on social media after the game. That includes things like student appreciation games, where we would do like co-branded t-shirts for a pep club, and other in-game opportunities. You might recall our team did a basketball game this year. We did a big partnership with Dairy Queen and did some giveaways for their Dilly bars, which is basically some ice cream bar, and a halftime shot where a student would get called out and they'd get $250 if they made it. Nobody actually made it, unfortunately. But trying to do more of that to infuse more buzz and student engagement and fan engagement in general at the sporting event. So that's the goal of the video board. So for me, everything is essentially lined up to where once I can secure at least those six anchor partners, we would have enough funding to move forward with the video board. It would pay for itself within a 3 to 4 year time frame if we sold marketing spaces, and then we would be revenue generating after that. And the hope is that with that revenue, we could start planning for other scoreboard enhancements. Sometimes like graduation, where we're paying $8,000 to $10,000 to rent a video board every single time. We could have a video board outside at the football stadium, and so we would save a little bit of money on an annual basis, depending on what that loan agreement would look like with advertisers on a screen the size that you would see at a football complex.
So on a loan agreement, the amount of the loan that you're looking at that you would need to secure that would take 3 or 4 years to pay off?
The cost is still around $127,000.
So that's the cost for the board that you want to use?
Yes.
And you anticipate with all that advertising, it's still going to take that long?
3 to 4 years, yeah. That's the going rate from a market standpoint. So, like, the anchor partners are...
And it sounds like you have a lot of different incorporated in one event.
This is true. One of the challenges becomes market saturation, like you were just describing, right? We are keep going back to the same companies, so whether it's okay. They're already advertising the video board, or they're already advertising the football or baseball, okay. Or... So sometimes it becomes challenging. Like, we're already invested in the project. So while I'm hopeful that we'll get, you know, in totality, like 16 advertisers per year, that would be signing multi-year agreements, so we wouldn't have to worry about year over year. Dectronics, yeah, so it's for... this particular board, 10 years.
Good deal.
So the innovation right there is bringing that experience in there. Jen and I talked about it. This is our first chance to do something. Yes, $120,000. It's a fair amount of money. But it's a chance for us to get started. Bedford did a multi-million-dollar campaign down there. That's why you saw their athletic, basically their whole stadium was done with the same mechanism. Right there. In fact, we're using the exact same contract that they use down there. But we actually have the same terms.
With the same with the video board.
And we're using a video board here for the gift agreements. Okay, so it's a chance for us to get our feet wet in this arena to see if it's a good direction for us. And it's something that's not a huge, big project, really expensive. And so it's a great start.
So you take a loan out on it, so you don't need any upfront money? Good credit.
So what I've asked Chet to do is once he has it put together where that sponsorship is all set, come back. We'll go through that with you so you're in the loop. When it comes to the pay to participate, like I said, the one beautiful year we had, I want to say it was the 1 year of COVID that fall, is we didn't pay to participate, at least in the district I was in. I may have missed year two. So the pay to participate, you know, can be a barrier. We try to inform kids and families not to make it a barrier. We have mechanisms, but there are just some kids, some families that will not come forward. Or kids will use it as they're out too. We'll have a lot of conversation on pay to participate.
Why?
Just a matter of it can be very easily decided. It's just a matter of it's another $100,000 of revenue. So.
Well, if there's a $2 million expenditure right now, and the budget's at $104 million, there's $600,000 right there that. Because if you have a $1.4 million budget, you know what I mean, and you spend your expenditures on it, we're just basically expanding it $100,000 more. Essentially, that's all.
Yeah, it's $100,000. That's all.
Yes, that's it. It can easily be incorporated into adding on to your budget.
There's a lot.
It's just
general.
Like,
we're concerned
by millions.
Yep.
So, I don't think 100,000 is going to hurt.
Every
25,000. Okay, I'll have that conversation. Got it.
That's a lot of water filters.
So, any of the questions for sure, for Chet, I want to get him out of here. Appreciate it. Right?
Chet doesn't want to hang out with him?
I do. We have a girls' soccer game against Bedford at 7 and senior night.
So,
Chad, can I ask you a non-monetary question? First, can you tell me that with somewhat assurance, we don't have a problem in the Republic that's going on out of Dundee? I got a couple phone calls about that today, and I couldn't give an answer. I said I don't believe so. What do you think? What say you?
Well, in terms of our wrestling program in particular, what that I can say is they used to practice in the upper gym, which was somewhat out of sight, still obviously on our school grounds, and we have cameras and those sorts of things. They'd actually moved practice into the commons, and there's a security guard that sits at the front of the commons. So in terms of visibility, that's a program that could be any more visible. They are in front of anyone that walks into the school while they're practicing. I'm pretty sure that if something were happening on school grounds or as a part of school-affiliated time, that we would have known about it. I was a deputy tournament coordinator for BGSU, and I dealt with some very, very challenging situations. We had a hazing incident where a young man passed away in 2019, not within athletics, within a fraternity. It absolutely rocked the campus. And being on the forefront of that, I mean, there's a lot, whether it's intake and working with students that have been part of a sexual assault, whether it's doing interviews, being a part of that and working at a law firm, like having had those experiences, it is traumatic. I'm heard about that community.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very, very sad.
So this isn't something we suspect is going on in any of our programs.
Absolutely not.
Because I was asked about it, and I was on athletic teams in school, but I was on a team, and when you got in the end club, they said, well, didn't you do anything? I said, no. Somebody said, yeah, we did. If prior to getting your M club jacket, you had to wear a skirt and a wig and a hat to some school event. Something
like that.
Anything's
been around. Yeah,
but it was very innocent. What happened, obviously, is not.
I think you're bullshit.
Right. Certainly, anytime something like this happens at a community adjacent, and tennis rightly should go up, and we should start paying really close attention. I collect all of our team rules from our coaches in the preseason so that if there were something that were written into folk in tradition. That's oftentimes where hazing happens. To your point, always done it. That's something that on the front end could come forward and make sure that that's not something that's going to happen here. There are things that are unwritten rules, which you speak of, that you try to learn about team culture and long time. I don't want to speak for anything that's happened or has happened to them. But as it relates to Monroe Public Schools, I'm very confident with the leaders that we have in place of our programs. We've done a fantastic job hiring new ones as well. And they're receiving training. It's something that we're talking about and communicating about. As it relates to wrestling in particular, I've just talked to our wrestling coaches throughout the entire program and said, you're going to be asked about this, of course. It's so close to our community. This is the word. You don't know. Do not provide conjecture into what's going on. Do not communicate publicly. Don't post anything on social media about your opinion on it.
Sure.
Your communication channels, if you have questions about MHSA policies or what happens to these students or wins vacated or whatever, like work directly through me if you have wrestling questions. But the personal conduct or the professional conduct questions, it's not for you to comment on at all.
You know, my response was, I honestly didn't, I don't know. But I felt assured enough that you guys had this under control and you were on top of it. That was my response.
Yeah.
And I need just to hear.
I hope you heard.
Give me your word.
Really heard your voices. Really, parents, if they have a question, call it. It's not going to get kicked under the rug. Right there. And so that's what we encourage our parents is if you've got a question on something, you call him and so he can dive into it. You know, going through his first year, he's had to learn a lot, you know, about what's been done in programs, not done in programs and expectations. And so, like he said, we go for done deal what they're going through there. But it also creates an awareness on our side too, as he'll talk, I know with. When he has his overall coaches meetings, you know, we do it on Friday mornings in my cabinet. And if something happens in districts around him, somewhere in the state or country, he uses it too. And so he'll do the exact same thing with coaches about what is that goes on. And so I appreciate that question.
Thank you. So I can answer the community when they ask me.
Right.
Had a world before we became this world, and in my world before this, it was not documented, it didn't happen. So in the event or anything, a document in service or training that documents that this topic is specifically mentioned would probably be useful for any future, just a note of advice. The other thing is, I think we also need to be cautious on telling people what they can and can't say. If it's related to Monroe Public School business and their job is Monroe Public School, then you're right. There is a professionalism that is expected to maintain through Monroe Public Schools. But they are also people that live in the community and they're also parents and they also can have an opinion. So I think we need to make sure we always separate that from individual and their job.
So just in telling people, you know, what they can and can't say, I just, so, you know.
Well, he shared with the other employees our same advice that we would give if we're going through something is speak to only facts and keep in mind that if you push something out there, it can always turn back on you. And so it's an awareness that he did. I appreciate his wisdom that our own wrestling program was going to get asked questions.
Right. And from a public school employee standpoint, right, from a free speech standpoint,
sure,
outside of that job, they're not 24/7 the job people. They are also parents, grandparents, and whatnot that don't speak to the no public school stuff, but, you know, but they, I just think there's a separation there, like, you know, with free speech. Not ever stifle it.
We don't stifle it, but we also make sure our employees understand that free speech does have potential consequences in the community and at large, so advising is always a...
I think what he did was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I just said you always have to be cautious about the free speech aspect of it, too.
Even if you're out there in public as not an employee, you're still considered, you know, recognized USA being part of the Mineral Wrestling Program, not necessarily you're speaking as a public person.
Yeah. Like
you're
that's
always
the,
representing the school.
Yeah, that's the hard part about being a public school employee on any aspect is that you can't really ever take off the yoke completely.
Yeah.
Right, because it's such a part of like who you are, and you're so deeply ingrained in the school community and the broader community. So it's true, but like I think that any educator in any aspect, like anybody that's worked bus driver, parapro, classroom teacher, building administrator can say, even when you have an online presence, you still mind your P's and Q's. Like, I've never gone full tilt on social media.
Right on there, so.
Yeah, right. We do want to keep moving, so Chet, thank you very much.
You bet.
Our next agenda item is the
Trojans. We're going to kick the crap out of the kicking mule sign soccer.
You know, I thought for sure you were going to have that for the act night. Our high school kids be Bedford.
Yeah, well, what we need to do is we need to buy marketing and advertising space in Bedford and in Temperance for our public school.
So
trying to get Andy to let me put a billboard up on 75.
Wouldn't that be kind to your neighbors?
We play the same lesson. So the next item is the Sodexo contract renewal. And so we just want to know that's going to be coming, that always comes up fast. So every year, so last year we went through the bidding process. It's a 5-year contract. But in the great world of the state of Michigan, each year, though, you still renew the contract because you actually have to send everything through the state of Michigan. And so I'm going to turn this over to Cassie so she can just advise you of how the process works with food service and Sodexo and the state.
So the state sent out an email that I did include in board briefs a couple weeks ago in April and letting you know the process in a brief overview. And we submitted the documentation to the state a couple weeks ago, and actually this afternoon we just got back the approval from them that we can have the board take action. It is a contractual increase based on the CPI of, I forget which item. I'll play games today. It's a 3.1% increase on the management fee and the administrative fee, which brings it up from just over 9 cents per meal on the management fee to 9.36 cents per meal. The administrative fee increased from 23.59 cents to 24.32 cents per meal. And then we did not request any advance payment, and we made no guarantees, and we did not plan for them to invest anything because we have such an excess food service.
That
is the RFP document.
Yeah.
That was very helpful last year. I was just wanting to compare the two.
Oh, that doesn't change until another 5 years and you have to drop with it.
So these numbers don't change?
The scoring makes
the administrative cost is on here. The management fee is on here. At per meal, $299.378.
Yep. So that will, no. That's what I just said.
Yeah, that's why I'm looking at this year.
It'll look a little different based on the state provides us the forms that we have to complete.
So well, we'll have one of those.
All of that will be in the information that will be included in the board.
Okay, thank you.
And as I said, I was waiting to determine which June meeting it would be on based on when the state got back. Because they don't permit us to give anything to you to take action on until they say the numbers that they made us calculate.
So this information will be in board briefs, and then we had our first board meeting in June for approval. So take a look at it. If you have any questions between that time period right there, just reach out to us. But again, it has to go to the state to get approved. The state approves it, then it's back here.
Do we expect to have free lunches and breakfast again next year?
Yep. For everybody, right?
Yes.
Yep.
At this time, we have not heard that that's changing. So the application I had to start because of our summer programs did still have that, my school meal, free meals for all. I don't know what they're calling it now, but it changes.
So it'll give us the total projected operating cost like it did in this one, so we'll be able to see the increase.
I don't think that that's in the document today.
I'll provide
you with what the state required that we complete and that they approved for us to present to you.
So for the what they're going to receive, though, is it's all, so they got an increase in their reimbursement per meal, but it goes back to if our total meals last year was, our current year is a million, and next year it's only 900,000, they'll actually lose money. So it goes back to this reimbursement based off meals.
And the operating budget would be our food service fund budget.
I just always like it when you compare year to year. It's easier if we're using the same information.
I would love if everything the state gave me to fill out from year to year on things was the same, but.
But I should be able to compare.
Yes, it'll list what the current year per meal costs were, what the percentage changes, and what is the new rate. And then there's like an acknowledgement saying that we did want to continue with the food service management company, changing the scope of anything at this time. And then there is a signature from Sodexo on two pages, one being the pricing adjustment and one being that they do want to continue with this as well. And the state specifies which documents are signed by which party before and after the 14th section.
So this comes out of the food budget, which is part of the general fund.
No.
No, they're separate.
Food service is an entirely separate fund.
Thank you.
All right, and our last item is from our last conversation on the seed committee and the recommendations. Went back, talked to the that presentation, so we wanted to come back and go back through, and he had suggested some slides and just answer any remaining questions.
Yeah. So, well, thank you. And I would like to bring up Mrs. Gates. I want you to bring your chair up, Mrs. Gates, and join us so you can help me out. Mrs. Gates is the middle school health teacher. Team sports, PE, I think those are the things that you teach. And again, sex ed being a tiny portion of the 8-12 health curriculum. Based on our last meeting, I believe there were three questions or three asks or three further points for discussion. The first one was some sort of disclaimer that is provided to our students in the lesson. Again, we're not doctors, but we are approaching, STI protection through a science lens, and there is a vaccine for that. The disclaimer for students, there are several vaccines available for treating the HPV virus with documented effectiveness on 9 of the 14 known HPV virus strains. Potential side effects, both minor and serious, have been documented in patients due to the vaccine. As with any vaccine, please consult your personal physician before proceeding with an HPV vaccine regimen. So that is the disclaimer that, if approved, would be present in the lessons that make the HPV vaccine aware, make our students aware that the vaccine exists to help prevent against STIs. Another ask or point of conversation was about any further research specifically related to autoimmune deficiency syndrome in the vaccine, more serious side effects. So I could not find anything that directly linked the HPV vaccine to autoimmune, Guillain-Barré, anything that is high risk. But what I did is I found four studies, and they ascend in order. So this one was from 2017. It's called Human Papillomavirus Vaccination and Risk of Autoimmune Disease. And this is with a large cohort of 2 million girls from France. And among the 2.5 million girls, the HPV vaccination did not increase the incidence of autoimmune diseases, except for Guillain-Barré syndrome, which showed a higher incidence in vaccinated girls, 1.4 versus 0.4 per 100,000. While the study found a potential link between HPV vaccination and Guillain-Barré syndrome, it concludes that overall the vaccination poses minimal risk for autoimmune deficiencies, and further research is needed to confirm Guillain-Barré association. The next study was from 2018, HPV vaccine and autoimmune diseases, systematic review and meta-analysis of the literature. A meta-analysis of six studies involving nearly 500,000 participants found no correlation between autoimmune disorders and bivalent or quadrivalent HPV vaccinations. The study emphasizes the importance of accurate public information to help improve HPV vaccination coverage both in Italy and internationally. The next study was from 2021, Vaccinations in Autoimmune Diseases. HPV vaccines are significantly reduce the risk of cervical cancer, which is caused by the most common sexually transmitted viral infections of the genital tract. Three types of vaccines, bivalent, quadrivalent, nonvalent, are currently available. Extensive post-licensure studies and surveillance programs across multiple countries have demonstrated the general safety of HPV vaccines, including no significant increase in autoimmune or neurological conditions in vaccinated populations. While associated studies report rare adverse events like Guillain-Barré syndrome, large-scale meta-analysis and cohort studies found no consistent evidence of causal link between HPV vaccines and autoimmune or other serious diseases. And then the last one was from 2002, scientific evaluation of alleged findings in HPV vaccines. The HPV vaccine has not been conclusively linked to autoimmune or other health problems, as experimental findings cited in lawsuits have been shown to have flaws and insufficient evidence to support such claims. A recent meta-analysis found no statistically significant risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome following HPV vaccination, highlighting the importance of unbiased scientific evaluations to provide accurate information on vaccine safety. And once again, our major health organizations in this country, CDC, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, Association of Gynecologists, and or gynecologists and obstetricians all continue to support the safety of this vaccine and the effectiveness of fighting off 9 of the 40 potential strains. I could not find information other than this that supported that the vaccine wasn't safe. I did find quite a bit on law firms that are responsible or actively pursuing litigation against Gardasil and Merck, but I could not find anything. The third point of conversation was, or question was, what does this look like in the classroom? I think I spoke that it doesn't overwhelmingly change what we do. In a way, it adds and beefs up what we're allowed to talk about when it comes to unwanted pregnancies and STI and HIV protection. So Mrs. Gates created a unit plan, a couple worksheets, and then some slides with slides that students would see. They were very similar to what was presented to you. Those were provided in board briefs on Thursday, and Sarah is here to answer any questions along with me, if you have any, about what was provided in board briefs or anything else.
I'd just like to say thanks for all the time that you guys have put in on this.
Bob.
So, we'll need to go back to the beginning presentation. There's a disclaimer that's being put out there. So my question becomes, how much, and I think I've asked this a few times, we're talking, I think last meeting, coming back and reading, said that approximately 2 weeks would be spent on these two topics.
On sex ed, HIV, strands 6 and 7, so HIV and sexual education.
Well, HIV and AIDS is already on the NCC. So you're including that in the 2 weeks with the condoms and the HIV. Because HIV and AIDS is already curriculum that's already approved, and you already have your slides, and you already have all that. We're talking about what you're proposing, and what you're proposing right now are two topics. One is condoms, and one is HIV vaccine. And so I know at the last meeting you said that it's kind of intertwined all the way through, and it's intertwined in other classes because of conversations. So as that's intertwined in, not only is it intertwined in other areas, which makes an opt-in or out very difficult, but for your class specifically, I heard the 2 weeks. And so for me, you know, how much are we spending a week on in this one and a week on that one? Like, that's what I'm not getting when we talk about, because that was a lot of the conversation last time. What does the curriculum look like? And I know you provided information of it, but from the time frame standpoint, when you do the disclaimer that takes 25 seconds to read, and that is all you're giving against a vaccine, how much time is spent on the vaccine itself talking? So that's what I'm trying to understand. You've only proposed two things to discuss. Does that make sense?
Right, but there's two strands that we discussed. The first strand is sex education. And so in that, like, I talk about, like, the reproductive system for male and female and how to protect the reproductive systems. And that takes a week, okay? And then the next week is when I do the next strand, which is the STI, HIV, the pregnancy prevention. And so in that strand is where I would intertwine these two. So it would be intertwined when, I mean, we talk about abstinence in the first part because that is one way to help protect your reproductive system. But going into this, the next strand, the STI, HIV, and pregnancy prevention, abstinence is the number one thing. But these kids know so much more that they need to be prepared. They know what condoms are already. And when they ask me about it and I say, it's something we can't discuss in class, they look at me like, well, what do you mean we can't discuss it? And I say, you need to go home and ask your parents about it. And they just look at me like, are you serious right now? The vaccination isn't something that they ask about too much, but it is something that I feel that does need to be included because a lot of times when, you know, kids go to their checkups and whatnot, they're getting vaccinated. Half the time, they probably don't even know what they're getting. So if they are educated about it, it's something that they can talk to their parents about. And when I taught in Ohio and I taught about the vaccination, I really encourage my students, go home and talk to your parents. And I always said, like, some of you may even have this already, you know. And I would ask them, like, how many have it? And a lot of them were like, I don't know if I have it. And I would have kids that would come back and say, I do have it, you know. And I'd have kids that would come back and say, you know, I did talk to my parents about it. And, you know, I don't have it, but, you know, at least they talked to their parents about it. So they were generating conversations, which is, you know, what I always strive for. So again, this is more of a topic that would go into the second strand that I do within that second week.
But no, I don't think it's teaching about the vaccine. It's making students aware that there is preventative measures that you can take against 9 of the 40 cancer-causing strands. And
so this is actually
health curriculum. That's what I kept asking for the information on, like, what's in the health curriculum. So when we have this conversation, I don't have to keep asking and asking what I don't know and saying, okay, here's what it is. This is what we currently talk about, because you've mentioned several times that this vaccine's already mentioned. It's already mentioned as a preventative.
The vaccine is not currently mentioned as a preventative. I know 2 weeks ago there was some pretty big PDFs of the materials that are used to cover these strands in board briefs. I'll go back to my original statement, maybe a little clunky, but this is not a thing that is added and dropped in to disrupt what is already being taught. The HPV vaccine awareness piece is to let students know there are preventative measures that you can take to protect yourself from a slew of things that you may face somewhere down the road.
So one of the things we're discussing, obviously, right now, maybe your slides are going to get to it, is...
this was my next slide.
Okay.
So, that's it. Sorry. Sorry to disappoint.
That's the last one. I didn't want to jump ahead of you.
Okay.
I wanted to give you an opportunity. So the other portion of this is the condom side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand where you're coming from, Sarah. I can understand it. Always been a, this is our education, this is not taking it beyond that. And society has always stopped it. I understand their desire now to move it on. And I get that's the push. That the desire to teach kids sex in schools, and there's no other way to see it, when we saw your comment slide.
Yes, why do you
that he brought up was like, And remember when you brought that up?
Well, you ought to see Detroit public schools, because they actually show them how to use it.
Well, again, I think it said in here proper use of a condom or something.
Why is it constantly referred to teaching sex in schools? Because I don't think
it's called sex education.
Teaching sex, I think, implies that we are doing something, teaching something promiscuous or.
Yeah.
Inappropriate.
No.
Okay.
I'm just using the language of the course. I mean, if they wanted to call it something else, they could have. But it's called sex education. So you're educating on sex. So I guess you can take it up with the state that they don't like what they call it, but I'm just using the verbiage of what they're doing. It's sex education is what we're talking about. And so we talked about it last time on how that differs so much.
As a teacher, though, I don't stand up and say, okay, I'm teaching you about sex today.
I don't think you did. But I don't think that people in a public school, or our schools, I can't talk about those schools, with everything that we have to teach and everything we have to focus on to take this on, because it is so big. And it is so out there. And, you know, there's so many components of it. Because the minute you say, hey, I'm going to teach you about these vaccines, but it's up to you to get one, and they go home and say, hey, my teacher told me I should get that, now you've opened liability. I mean, essentially, if you're telling people that this is an option, act this way. So the same thing with a condom. You know what I mean? Well, we teach abstinence. Why do we teach abstinence? 100% only way. There is no questions asked that anything is going to happen. It keeps the school in a safety zone. That's why I believe the state, when they wrote the legal mandate, said, if you want to teach sex education, this is the guidelines you got to do. But we're not telling you have to do it. It's a choice. And I understand there's people that want the choice and there's people that don't want the choice. But there are two sides to it. And I would like, and we've talked about this before, in any presentation that we give, that it always talks about the two component sides. And in this, there are two sides, you know.
Well, that's not the role of the SEEB to want to abolish sex education.
Well,
the
no.
SEEB, I mean, we're
not
here
to.
Because the community, like the organization that the board created, however they created it, to.
You created it. You gave us the paper. True statement.
I read the motion. But it's our job to look at what we're doing and try and find ways to improve it. And it's the board's job mm-hmm. to decide if that is a direction that the school wants to go or the district
right.
wants to go.
And I like the way you put that, the board. I think
yes.
at some point we need to bring this to a vote.
I agree.
And stop wasting time, whatever we're
I
doing
agree.
Here. And let's find out. Either this thing sinks or it floats.
I'm with you. We're talking about 7 slides.
Yes.
No, well, that...
The 7 slippery slides.
Yeah, it's not just 7 slides. It's the context of what it is. But I'm with you, Larry. I didn't schedule all these sessions. I am a participant, the same as you. I believe put it to a vote and see whether this board wants it or not.
Agreed.
So we provide the opportunity for this open discussion, and on our next board agenda, you will see it there.
Thank you.
Any more questions from anybody else?
That closes it, Larry.
But I am glad to say that the default setting for all of this is that the parents have to opt in.
Yes.
Right? I like the fact that instead of it being, hey, parents, you have to opt your children out of this, because the problem with an opt-out is if for some reason a parent doesn't get that communication,
yeah.
whoops-a-daisies, your child now has this in their curriculum,
yeah.
this is the opposite, right? So parents have to have the communication and sign off in order for their children to consume this. So that is something that I feel is like a good fail-safe for us, because that gives each and every family and parent and guardian their power to control what is appropriate for their student. And that's something that I really respect, because that shows a level of care that we have for our parents.
Mm-hmm.
That shows a level of care that we have for our guardians, and wanting to give them that power for their students to determine what's appropriate for their children, because this is such a sensitive topic for so many families, right? And every family wants to handle this differently. And because of that, I think that that is a really important piece to all of this, is that it is a default opt-in instead of a default opt-out. I think that's just a really... I don't know who thought of it, but whoever thought of the opt-in instead of opt-out was a beautiful, like, tour de force. So congratulations and kudos to you.
What's important, too, is what is the information that's put on that opt-in form, that you put enough information so you fully understand what is going to be explained
mm-hmm.
and talked about in the class.
So I understand the concept, and I agree with you, Mary. If we were talking about a course that says, for these 3 weeks, these we're going to be, and for those 3 weeks, I don't want my student in there. So an opt, that makes 100% perfect sense. But when we talk about these topics being interwoven with the rest of the curricula, including HIV and AIDS, which has already been approved, the opting in is more challenging, and what do you now not include? So what I want my child to, do we want some parents want their children to be educated on reproduction and educated on HIV and AIDS and those things that have already been approved, but they don't want this other stuff. So you're right. That's why I keep asking the question, how does this present in the classroom? If it's interwoven, there's no way to do that. There's just no way.
The opt-in, that content, is not being interwoven into other areas. Condoms not being interwoven into other areas.
That's not what they said.
No, HPV vaccination not being interwoven into other areas. Those are confined only to the opt-in. Am I correct?
When you say other areas, what do you
mean? We're not talking about condoms and alcohol.
So,
in that class right there, you're talking about a two-week session. During that two-week session, this is what you're talking about. Outside of that two-week session, you have another 18. So you have 18 weeks in that semester. Two of that 18 weeks, the other 16 weeks, other discussions. You're not interweaving into the information.
No. The only thing that I interweave from this is like abstinence, because abstinence means like choosing not to do something. So I interweave that in all of the topics that we talk about, because that's making good choices. But for condoms and the vaccination, that would only fall into a specific lesson on ways to prevent STI and HIV and pregnancy. So that it would fall onto one lesson. Yeah, so I was confused on when.
Are you saying like one class period, or when you say class, you're talking about like the health class?
I seriously been trying to ask that question and get that information for like 2 months. Like, I seriously, even in the notes of the last meeting,
it's in health
class. What is the curriculum?
That's what I'm saying. It's in health class that this is addressed. How many minutes a day are you in health? 55 minutes. And so what I'm seeing right here, clarify for me, is that what the parents will be opting into is what you've shown us for that period of time. If it took you 3 days to go through that information, that's that time period.
Right.
So
you don't
talk
about
any other time. Condoms will never be talked about, and HIV will never be talked about outside of 3 classes. That's the first I've heard that.
Give them the written test, it would be something that would be discussed on the test to, you know, test their.
So my issue is, I agree with you, Mary. That is probably the best way forward if you wanted to do this. The problem with that is it's not clarified. So this is the first time I heard it's only going to be a couple of classes. It's always been talked about as interwoven through it, and it's always been talked about in different ways. And we haven't even, HPV is pretty much the only thing we've even discussed. Once we've only brought up condoms, that hasn't even been a non-topic ever since then, which I think is a greater issue, because I think I read somewhere where it said, and how to correctly use it was in one of the,
that's one of the statistics leading to.
Statistics. They're not going to talk about how to correctly use it.
That's one of our guarantees that we won't do.
On the effectiveness of condoms, all it is.
I want to apologize if I misled anyone talking about how these things are interwoven. There's two strands, strand 6 and 7, HIV, STIs, and then sex education. These things will come up when these two units are discussed. These two strands are discussed.
It shows exactly like what is currently taught and exactly what.
Materials were sent out in board briefs 2 weeks ago from reproduction.
Is there specific like what will be added that isn't currently taught?
What's currently taught?
Or what will be added?
Was it highlighted like what will be added?
Anything to deal with vaccines, which wasn't much, vaccine awareness, and then condoms being something additional that will prevent, that can prevent unwanted pregnancy, and STI, STD infection.
Because as an 8th grade teacher, I'm teaching a 9th grade health class. So after they have me, they don't take another health class. Like, that's it. That's but this is the graduation. They're, if they take it in eighth grade, that's their graduation requirement. But that would be their last time that they have it. So, you know, I told them that today. Like, this is your last time. So I really stress the importance of taking care of their sexual health, and because we actually started with the male reproductive system today. So
we understand the desire of wanting this, and there's a whole culture of this. We understand that, and where people stand in their culture, where they stand. But this is not a minor thing. This is a very big undertaking of change in our community that's not happened before. And it's also within the state. If the state thought that students should have this, what do? They mandate everything. This is this particular, like, no, we're hands off. But if you want to do it, these are all the requirements. This is everything you have to do. This is how you have to do it, and that's how it was. So it's not just a casual, are we going to teach our kids sex ed? It is a like David said before, a gateway.
I'm with Larry. Okay, so we'll vote on this in the first meeting.
That's all
good. Okay, Jerry, any?
We do not.
Okay. Includes our agenda. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion.
Do I have support?
Support.
All in favor, raise your hand. Three. Minerva Public Schools Board of Education.
Second, let me turn on.